Welcome to This Month in Muscular Dystrophy. I'm Kevin Flanagan from the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Each month on this podcast, we invite authors of recent publications to discuss how their work improves our understanding of inherited neuromuscular diseases and what their work might mean for treatment of these diseases. Today, I'm very pleased to have as our guest Dr. Carsten Boneman, Senior Investigator at the Neurogenetics Branch and Chief of the Neuromuscular and Neurogenetic Disorders of Childhood Section of the National Institutes of Neurologic Disorders and Stroke of the National Institutes of Health. Welcome, Carsten.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And I can just want to point out to our listeners that a link to the paper we're going to discuss can be found on our website. And that paper is actually from the Annals of Neurology in January of this year, entitled Large Genomic Deletions, A Novel Cause of Ulrich Congenital Muscular Dystrophy. So, Carsten, maybe we could begin by just asking, what is a congenital muscular dystrophy, and how is it different, for example, from Duchenne or other kinds of muscular dystrophies?
That's a good question. Congenital muscular dystrophy really only means that this is a disorder of muscle that is present at birth or in early infancy, and the muscle shows features of a muscular dystrophy. In other words, it shows evidence for degeneration and regeneration of muscle, but sometimes only just mild so-called myopathic changes. Most importantly, the muscle biopsy excludes other known neuromuscular disorders that start in early life. So it's a pretty broad definition of these disorders, starting early in childhood, at birth, or early infancy, with these rather nonspecific findings in the muscle biopsy. The phenotypic spectrum, that is, the clinical spectrum of these disorders, is extraordinarily wide, not only in phenotypic presentations, but also in the age range. We now know that congenital muscular dystrophies can actually become evident much later in life. We still call them congenital muscular dystrophy. We'll probably touch on that later on as we go.
Right. So they have many many different syndromes that really fall under this name.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
So we'll talk today about Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy. Some of the other ones our listeners might know of would...
Yeah, there's what we call genetic heterogeneity in this group of disorders, meaning there are many, many different genes causing a lot of different clinical phenotypes. Some phenotype that people may have heard about are Walker-Warburg syndrome or Fukuyama congenital muscular dystrophy or muscle-eye brain disease. These are all congenital muscular dystrophies caused by different genetic problems in a pathway of a muscle protein called alpha-dystroglycan. There's also merosin-deficient congenital muscular dystrophy, one of the muscular dystrophies, congenital muscular dystrophy that has been known probably for the longest time because the British neurologist Batten described this disorder some 100 years ago for the first time. So they have a long history. And the congenital muscular dystrophy type Ulrich is yet another subtype amongst the congenital muscular dystrophies. Having said that, there are many genes that we have not yet discovered. So even though we know there are many patients with congenital muscular dystrophy that have mutations in these given genes, many others remain undiagnosed so far, and many more genes remain to be discovered.
So your paper addresses the group of these disorders called collagen 6-related myopathies. Maybe we could start by you describing, what is collagen 6?
Collagen 6 is a molecule of the extracellular matrix. The extracellular matrix is basically the part of a tissue that is outside of a cell. So muscle is composed of muscle cells, which are the motors of the muscle. They contain the contractile apparatus. They're highly specialized cells, but they have to live in an environment. And the environment is the extracellular matrix that is around the muscle and also leads into the tendon, then, which then leads onto the bone to transmit the force that a muscle is generating onto the muscle and the bone to then cause a movement. So the matrix is basically covering all of these cells around them, highly complex structure with many different molecules, and collagens as a group of molecules are a major component of that, and collagen 6 is a specialized collagen in these matrices.
So this, all muscle fibers really are anchored to this matrix in a way, each
That's
muscle
right.
fiber.
Yes, they are.
Now, collagen 6 is a fairly complicated molecule by itself, isn't it? There's three subunits.
Yeah, it is composed of three independent genes, two of which live, so to speak, next to each other on one of the chromosomes, and another one, a bigger one, is on a different chromosome. Now, all three genes have to be expressed, they have to be made by the muscle cells to make collagen 6. So a basic building block of collagen 6 contains three independent gene products. But that's not the end of it. This basic building block that contains the three independent gene products then assembles again to form a dimer, so two of them, a tetramer, four of them, which is then put out into the matrix to combine to form this network, which is then collagen 6. It looks like, when you look at it under the electron microscope, it looks like beads on a string when you look out in the matrix. And it is, as you pointed out, a complex assembly process that leads to this state, to this appearance of collagen 6 out in the matrix.
So we'll talk today then about syndromes where problems with this production or assembly cause these syndromes. Let's talk for a minute about the syndromes. There's really two main syndromes associated with this,
yes.
Ulrich and Bethlem myopathy.
There's Ulrich and Bethlem. And they have a history again. Otto Ulrich was a pediatrician in Germany, and he was actually a clinical geneticist, a doctor who recognizes syndromes. He recognizes clinical peculiarities and is able to pinpoint them and describe them. And he recognized these children that appeared very unique to him, very characteristic to him in the 30s in two papers. And he called it scleratonic congenital muscular dystrophy. Scleratonic refers to something that is so highly characteristic of these patients. Sclerosis means contracture or tightness of the joints. And atony means loss of tone or floppiness. And what these children have, they have at the same time in different joints, they have stiffness of the joint and floppiness of other joints. And this is now contractures and hyperlaxity existing in the same patient. But it's so highly characteristic that once you have seen a child with a typical Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy, you will always recognize it.
So a child could, for example, have contractures at the elbows and not be able to stretch those out, yet at the same time have very loose fingers or
yes,
thumbs.
Yes, and that's often the case. And usually what parents notice right at birth is that the fingers and the feet are extremely flexible, so the hand can be bent back to the forearm and the foot back to the shin, and these children appear very loose-jointed or double-jointed, as they're sometimes called. The contractures may or may not be present at birth, but they invariably develop as the children get older.
So this is what Ulrich defined. What did Bethlem describe?
Bethlem and Weingarten were two neurologists in Holland in the 70s, and they were working on one big family with this peculiar milder muscular dystrophy that also had an early onset, by the way. They pointed that out. The onset was in early childhood, but patients were able to walk, and they were walking into late adulthood, but they developed a peculiar pattern of contractures again, meaning joint stiffness of the elbows, of the Achilles tendon, but also of the fingers, and the fingers couldn't be bent back all the way. And he felt this was a rather benign condition, so he called it a benign muscle disorder that was inherited in a dominant way, meaning it was passed on from generation to generation with a 50% chance.
So that actually brings me to this sort of next question for you. Perhaps you could describe how mutations in the same genes, these two disorders, Ulrich and Bethlem myopathy, are due to mutations in these collagen 6 genes, yet the mutations cause different syndromes. And how
yes.
is that?
Well, initially, so the first of these to be identified on a molecular basis was actually Bethlem, because these large families allowed researchers to do linkage analysis. That is, they were able to trace the location of the genetic defect in the genome in these families. And then by using molecular techniques found that they were actually caused by mutations in one of the collagen 6 genes. So they are inherited in a dominant way. There was one mutation on one gene that was passed on from generation to generation. Having that mutation in one of the two genes that everyone has, inherited from mother and father, was enough to cause the disease. Now, it was actually Enrico Bertini in Italy, a brilliant pediatric neurologist, who picked up on the similarities between Ulrich and Bethlem patients and said, well, the Ulrich patients really look in many ways like very, very severe Bethlem patients. Maybe we should look at collagen 6 in them as well. And he did by using an antibody to stain for collagen 6, and collagen 6 in his patients was completely absent. Molecular analysis in these patients then showed they were recessive patients. They had mutations that prevented the formation of collagen 6 of both of the genes. So initially it was felt, well, that's easy. Ulrich patients are recessive patients. no collagen 6 present, inherited from both parents who are carriers and clinically unaffected, and Bethlehem is a dominant disease where the gene defect is inherited from generation to generation. That became clear by the work of a number of laboratories, including our own, that actually a number of patients with Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy also have dominant mutations. And there are mutations that are not inherited in the family, but they're actually de novo mutation in the patient. So the patient with the syndrome, the Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy, is the first in the family to carry the mutation, a new mutation which happens quite frequently. Now, these dominant mutations are different from the dominant mutations in Bethlehem by degree. They seem to be acting more severely dominant. We call that a dominant negative effect. The one mutant gene copy is able to take down, if you will, the healthy gene copy that is made from the other normal gene, and basically, in effect, prevents collagen 6 from being made. And thus, the phenotype, the severity, can be as severe as a recessive.
So most of these really, they affect the assembly of this complex, the complex assembly process you discussed, right?
Yeah,
sort of gum up the works of that assembly.
Right, so this gets a little bit complicated, but a dominant negative mutation acts as a dominant negative mutation by being able to sneak into the assembly process. So the mutation allows the assembly to happen, and the mutant copy of the gene basically gets carried forward in the assembly to the very end. However, the product of the assembly, the final product, is dysfunctional. It doesn't work. So by that mechanism, the dominant copy of the gene is able to poison the entire assembly process, taking down all of the normal chains on its way, and therefore we call it dominant negative. It is really destroying, poisoning the assembly of the collagen 6.
All right, so for those of you keeping score at home now, we have this collagen 6 with three different genes that encode it, with two different syndromes, most of them where you can either dominantly or recessively inherit it, and sometimes just one copy is bad enough in any one of these three different subunit genes to cause disease. No wonder it's such a complex disease to diagnose.
It is, yes, because you always, when you look for mutations, you're never sure, am I going to see recessive mutations, in which case I have to find two mutations, one on each copy, or am I going to see dominant mutation, in which case I only see one mutation on one copy. So I have to understand the effect of the mutations on the assembly. And even more complicated, there is now a gradation of phenotypes of clinical presentation between Ulrich and Bethlehem. They're no longer distinct disorders. They're intermediate severities linking the two. Intermediate severities, again, come in these two genetic flavors, dominant and recessive. And you can imagine how important it is in a family situation to know what type of mutation is causing the problem in the child. Because in a recessive mutation situation, there will be a recurrence risk for the next child. If it's a de novo dominant mutation, there's almost no recurrence risk in the family. So from a diagnostic as well as a genetic counseling perspective, it is really important to understand why the mutations and how they cause disease.
Well, that nicely brings us to your paper itself, in which you describe large genomic deletions as a cause of Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy. What do you mean by large genomic deletions?
A deletion is basically a loss of genetic material. And deletions come in all kinds of sizes. They come from single nucleotide bases, deletion, so there's just one building block of the DNA is missing, and that can be disease-causing. And they can be as large as encompassing an entire gene. And that's what I understand when I say a large genomic deletion, so a major portion of an entire gene, or even in some of the cases in this paper, two of the collagen 6 genes that are sitting next to each other on the chromosome can be deleted by this large genomic deletion. That's that's what I understand when I say large genomic deletions. The problem is picking them up. By regular genetic testing that is applied in up to this time, and this is about to change, but up to this day in most diagnostic laboratories, the genetic testing that is done to look for mutations in the collagen 6 genes is not designed to pick up the large genomic deletions. So they will go undetected if you use conventional molecular techniques.
So these are likely to be turned up perhaps by new methods coming into common practice, right? There's the comparative genomic hybridization or other testing that looks for these routinely.
Yeah, that is correct. We know that this is a mutation and mechanism that can occur and that should not be missed because of the genetic implications that I discussed earlier. We now need to go back to these genetic tools that we have to detect larger genomic rearrangements that we have available to us. In other words, when we get a genetic result from a patient and we think there could be another mutation that we're not detecting, we have to be able to go back to the laboratory and say, well, have you looked for large genomic deletions? How can we do that to complete the genetic diagnosis and the picture for the patient?
So the mutations you describe, what else do they tell us about the syndrome?
So one interesting piece of the story is that we found that parents who carry these large genomic deletions on just one of the two chromosomes are clinically asymptomatic. And that was a little bit contradicting conventional wisdom in the collagen 6 field, which had said, well, if you have half normal collagen 6, that's disease-causing. It may be mild, but it's disease-causing. As a matter of fact, we actually found the first large genomic deletion of the collagen 6 genes incidentally in an unaffected person where we did genome studies in for a child with a different syndrome. And when we did our comparative genomic hybridization to look for large deletions, we found the collagen 6 genes to be deleted, and not only in this boy, but also in his father, who was completely asymptomatic. So that tuned us in to the possibility that large genomic deletions could exist as a carrier status, so meaning that persons out in the normal population could carry these mutations without being symptomatic. However, when they're inherited to the child and the child is getting a second mutation from the other parent, then they will become asymptomatic. In other words, they act as recessive mutations. Which means essentially that if we find a mutation in a patient and we can't find the second mutation, we think it's recessive, it could be a large genomic deletion. We have to go back in the family and show that. And the other important part it means for us is actually an important lesson when we think about therapies or molecular therapies. It tells us that having half of normal collagen 6 is actually enough to be healthy. So it tells us a little bit about the dosage that we need to be healthy. Now, when you think back to the discussion that we had about the dominant negative mutations, it tells us, well, this dominant negative, the mutation on the dominant negative gene copy is actually acting because it takes down the normal copy. If it were just not there, if it was absent, and we only had one normal copy left, there would be no disease. So that's an important molecular message to us when we think about therapies.
Well, stepping away from mutations and your paper specifically for a moment, what are the challenges for therapies of the collagen 6 disorders and Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy specifically?
So first of all, there are many challenges. The first challenge, of course, is to understand what collagen 6 is actually meaning to muscle, where we need collagen 6 around the muscle. And that question is really surprisingly still quite mysterious. We know that collagen 6 probably has something to do with the stability of the muscle cell, but it's probably not a major role in force transmission that is collagen 6 major role. It seems to be more a role of support to the muscle cell to make it, if you want, happy in its environment. It seems to be sending to the muscle cell signals that tell it to be large, so not shrink. It tells it to stay alive, that is, not die. And we call this apoptosis. If you disconnect a cell from its normal environment, it will actually switch on cell death pathways, which are built into every cell of the body, which is a safety valve. If a safety mechanism, if the cell gets into the wrong neighborhood, like cancer cells, it's supposed to shut itself down. So what happens to the muscle cells, it looks like, although it may not be the entire story, but down the line, if it gets disconnected from its normal environment represented by collagen 6, then it seems to be shrinking, undergoes atrophy, and eventually apoptosis, cell death. So something in this interface between muscle and its matrix is extremely important to maintain the normal health and viability of a muscle cell in its context. And we need to understand these pathways because there may be ways that we can intervene, maybe ways to make muscle more resistant to these detrimental disconnection from the matrix. As a matter of fact, some of these medications are being thought about at the moment to see whether they could be applicable in this clinical context, and that may be something that we will be seeing in the next few years as clinical trials develop. Now, the second challenge is the combination of weakness that these patients have and the features pointed out initially, which are the contractures, the drawing contractures, and the laxity. There's actually a double hit, so to speak, to the patients, because not only do the muscles get weak, but also the joint contractures prevent a lot of functionality. So the knees cannot be straight anymore, which makes walking impossible and often. The elbows get contracted, meaning the upper extremity, the arm function becomes impaired. And also the rib cage gets stiff, making breathing ever more difficult, including the weakness of the diaphragm in this equation. So one of the things that invariably happens in children with the ulrics, or the more severe type of this condition, is that they will get into progressive problems with breathing. There are vital capacity drops, and their breathing becomes more difficult. Now, that is actually something that we can do something about in this day and age. We can actually intervene, and our improved pulmonary management is one of the best therapies that we can offer at this point in time. Understanding this natural history and this pulmonary decline in these children allows us to intervene early, to be proactive, and actually change the natural history of the disease. If you go back in the literature, you'll find that the life expectancy of patients with ulrich is in the teenage years. That's no longer true. Patients live into adulthood with adequate pulmonary proactive intervention, monitoring this decline very carefully. And we don't know what the natural history of the disease is anymore. From a molecular point of view, if I can read, this is your next question, we are much further away from it. So many people on this podcast may have heard about gene therapy and approaches like this. It's a challenging thing in collagen 6 disorders, because most of the mutations are actually dominant negative mutations in the collagen 6 genes. And if you just replace another normal copy of collagen 6, the mutant abnormal copy will still be around and interfere with that normal copy, still causing a dominant negative effect. So maybe not a good strategy. So one of the strategies that we're working now very actively on is to see whether we can actually get rid of the mutant, the dominant negative copy of the gene. As I told you before, our paper tells us that just having half normal is actually fine. You have no phenotype. So taking the mutant out, knocking it down, getting rid of it, is a therapeutic strategy that's many, many years away, but is a potential molecular way to intervene in these disorders.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, and for that, not only that great discussion of your paper, but for that great overview of the congenital muscular dystrophies and where we stand with the collagen 6 disorders. Thanks very much for participating.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
This podcast is brought to you by Nationwide Children's Hospital. You can find out more about the Muscular Dystrophy Program and ongoing clinical trials at Nationwide Children's at our website, nationwidechildrens.org/muscular-dystrophy-podcast. You'll also find a link to the published abstract of Dr. Boneman's study that we discussed today. Thanks again for joining us, and look for us next month.